So I guess we'll read again the chapter. It takes about 2.5 minutes, I think, to read the chapter, just to get the flow of Hebrews chapter 4. So let us therefore fear lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you individuals should seem to have come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them, them being the Israelites of old, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into the rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest. Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest. Seeing therefore it remains that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief, better translated, probably disobedience. Again, he limits a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time. As it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. For if Jesus or Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterwards have spoken of another day. There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, that is God's rest, he also has rested, literally, from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor or give diligence, therefore, to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief or disobedience. For the word of God is quick and powerful, or living and active, and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrows literally, and as a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Seeing then we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And may the Lord just bless to us the reading of his word. So this chapter, just to briefly review from last week, what I tried to express, this chapter is about rest, the rest of God, and the rest of God is heaven. And here, basically, although there are other rests, of course, there's rest on the earth in service, there's God's rest that we'll look at, and so on. But the rest here is the rest that God has planned for his people after they die. And we saw that we looked at this chapter as being one of of doubt and contingency, that there is some suspicion that some of them were going to fall back into Judaism, were not true believers, perhaps, because we know that a true believer really can't lose his faith. And God will keep the believers. We do believe in eternal security, even for these folks. And but there is some doubt here, and that was bracketed by verse 1 and verse 11. That whole section there is having to deal with rest. Let us give diligence to enter that rest in verse 11, and let us therefore fear lest we have come short of it. So, and then verse 3, just to drop down to verse 3, there's three things expressed there. I don't think I got into that in full last week. There's three things expressed. We which have believed do enter into the rest. and that refers to heaven. We which we, having believed, enter into the rest. That's really the best way to translate it. And then that, so that's stated positively, the believers enter into his rest. But then the second part, as he has said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest. And that's the unbelievers, and I just want to look at that for a sec. And then, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, and that's the third item there, that God has actually finished his works, and he brings that in verse 4, for he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. So there's three things in this verse that we need to really get a hold of. And the first one, as I've just to reemphasize it, that belief brings us into the rest. It brings us into the good of heaven. Okay, so faith brings us into heaven. The second, and last week I talked about the ifs in this chapter, of which there are eight. And there's an if in this chapter, and it's different from the if of contingency and doubt, that there, if this, you know, if you really believe and so on, if we hold fast the confidence, and if we hold the beginning of our confidence, we are made partakers of Christ, and so on, if then. But here's a different kind of if, and that those other ones were, technically they're called an if of third class, and they're divided into classes. And this is actually an important part of the Bible, that they're divided into classes based on the tenses of the verbs and also the moods of the verbs. Now, a mood is either an indicative mood or a subjunctive mood. A subjunctive mood is one of doubt. It may happen, it may not happen. And an indicative mood is something that is going to happen. So they're divided that way on the basis of the tenses of the verbs and also of the moods of the verbs, what's called the mood of the verb. And that's important, actually. But here we have an if that has the then clause unexpressed. So the then clause is actually unexpressed here. It's if they shall enter my rest, and the then clause would be something impossible. You can make up something impossible. If they enter into my rest, then my word is false. You could say something like that, but God doesn't have to say that, because obviously God's word is not false. So that is, so this is better translated as not. They shall not enter into my rest, and that's actually three times in this section here. It's in this verse, and it's down in verse 5, and it's in chapter 3 and verse 11. They shall not enter into my rest. And that's called a condition of first class, and that is determined as fulfilled. It's a condition of first class. It is determined as fulfilled. They shall not enter into my rest. It's not, there's no the undetermined with prospect of fulfillment. It is determined as fulfilled. So when we read about ifs in the Bible, we can't just sort of willy-nilly think that they're can all be translated as since or whatever. We have to actually look at them carefully, look at the grammar carefully. There's a condition of second class in here as well, in verse 8, which I'll get to. I want to look at, so the first group enter into the rest, they're saved. The second group are not saved. So what are the works finished? And the works finished from the foundation of the world, I take it, are the works that provide us with salvation. They are the works that provide us with salvation. God has done it. Everything is prepared. It's like the feast in the Bible. All things are ready, come. God's already looked after the whole thing. So I want to look at that phrase, works were finished from the foundation of the world. It actually occurs seven times in the Bible. I'm not going to go over all seven times, don't worry. But I do want to look at three of them, because I think they're germane to what we're dealing with here. The works, so in Matthew 25, we read that about a kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So there's a kingdom prepared from the foundation of the world. And in Revelation 13, we read about, and I should just read this. I'm going to want to read Revelation 13 for us here. And Revelation 17 as well. It's 13 and 8 and 17 and 8. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship the beast whose names were not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And that's the way that that grammar is. Verse 8 of chapter 17, whose names were written, not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. So there's an interesting study here in the word works. When you read Genesis 2 and 2 that this cites, it says God rested the seventh day from all his work. It's a singular. God rested the seventh day from his work. Now, what was his work? Well, his work was the work of creation. But here it mentions works. I'm going to suggest to you that, and that's quoted from the Septuagint version of the Bible, the Greek translation. And where, I don't know whether the Septuagint was inspired or not. I think it wasn't, because it seems to be inaccurate in some parts. But where it's quoted in the New Testament, it is accurate, because the Spirit of God is bringing it forward. So what's the difference between work in the Old Testament and works in the New Testament? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that the kingdom prepared and the Lamb slain and the names written in the book of life all happened in the mind of God from the foundation of the world. God, and now I, you know, and there's a big debate on, was the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, or is it, do you put that clause before and say their names were written in the book of life of the Lamb slain? Well, you know what, it's written the way it's written, and there's A.T. Robertson thinks it goes best that way. Most of the commentators don't, I'll be honest with you. They want to switch it around. I don't. I think that the Spirit of God wrote it the way he wrote it. And he wrote it because he wants to see that the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world in the mind of God. In the mind of God, God had this. The kingdom was prepared from the foundation of the world. And that was part of God's works. That was part of his works. Names written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. That's the works of God. That's what God did. Those are his works. And I'm going to suggest that to you. Now, the commentators, most of them disagree with my interpretation of Revelation 13. A.T. Robertson doesn't, and a man called Alford, who is a Greek scholar of the 19th, of the 18th century, agrees with my interpretation as well, but most of them will disagree because they can't see how the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. But how is the kingdom prepared from the foundation of the world? It's the same thing. How is there's no kingdom. There's no kingdom right now. There isn't a kingdom, but there is a kingdom prepared in the mind of God, and that's good enough. So these are the works. So the work's all done to provide, the work's finished to provide salvation. You drop on to verse 5, he repeats the thing, they shall not enter into my rest. He's reinforcing the fact that unbelievers, those who refuse to believe the word of God, refuse to believe the testimony of God, are not going to enter into heaven. And it's a very solemn warning to us. So those three things are found in verse 3, amplified in verse 4. And that's my interpretation of the word works there, as opposed to work in the Old Testament. And if anybody has any further light to shed on it, I don't claim infallibility, and I'd be interested in hearing your views on it. And then verse 5 is a repetition. Verse 6 talks about there remains, therefore, that some must enter therein. So some people are going to be saved. God's going to see to it that some people are going to be saved. My word shall not return unto me void, but shall accomplish the purpose whereto I have sent it. Excuse me. they to whom it was preached entered not in because of unbelief or failure to hearken, disobedience. So God doesn't give up. Again, he limits, he defines a certain day, today, saying in David, after so long a time. So 400 years later, after the initial promises to go into the land, and they finally entered into the land, God opens up another day. He says, today, after so long a time. It's 400 years later. And he says, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. So God, and like I think I said last week, today is today. Today is today. Today, when the writer wrote this, it was today. When David wrote it, it was today. And today is today. So he defines it, and so he repeats the offer, reinforces the offer, saying in David, after so long a time, after 400 years, he repeats the offer because he could see that the people of Israel were drifting again. And then he says, for if Jesus had given them rest or Joshua had brought them into rest, then would God not afterwards have spoken of another day? So I like to think that the Jesus of the Old Testament was not able to bring rest. But the Jesus of the New Testament is able to bring rest. And the reason it's translated Jesus is it's the Greek translation of the Hebrew Yeshua. Yeshua is actually the way it's pronounced, I understand. That's the way the Jews nowadays pronounce it, Yeshua. And you take that into Greek and you get Jesus, you take Jesus, and you take it into English, you get Jesus. So Jesus of the Old Testament was not able to give them rest. And when you think about it, there wasn't much rest in Canaan. They were always fighting. They're fighting people. There's always people around trying to take over their cities and take their crops. And sometimes you read the land had rest 40 years, but there wasn't a lot of rest. But when God gives us rest, he's going to give us rest. And he says, therefore, there remains a rest. Oh, and this if, by the way, is the condition of second class. This is the other one. This is the if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not have spoken of a second day. That's determined as unfulfilled. This is an unfulfilled condition. So some of them are uncertain whether they'll be fulfilled. Some of them are absolutely certain, and this is certain that it's not fulfilled. So that's the eight ifs. So now if you learn nothing else from me, you've learned that there are eight ifs, and there are eight ifs, and they're divided into these sections here in this, and there are three different classes. So there remains therefore a rest to the people of God. Remains a rest to the people of God. And this word, rest, is different, once again, than the other words for rest. This is the word for a Sabbath rest. The Greek is sabbatismos. It's the only place it's found in the New Testament. But I think it defines the other rests, defines what God's rest really is. And he rested the seventh day. It's derived from the seventh. It takes us back to the seventh day, the Sabbath, from all his works. God's going to give us a Sabbath rest to the people of God. There remains a rest to the people of God. And I just like to look at that phrase as well, the people of God. Just think of how marvelous a phrase that is. We are the people of God. When it sort of hit me, I thought, man, that is really, so I looked it up with the help of concordance, and it occurs five times in the Bible. People of God occurs five times. Two times in the Old Testament, in Judges and in 2 Samuel, people of God, and three times in the New Testament, once here, once in Hebrews chapter 11, and once in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 says, You're a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in times past were not a people, but are now the people of God. And we're the people of God. What an honor to be called the people of God. And we should conduct ourselves like the people of God. We shouldn't conduct ourselves like the world. We should conduct ourselves as God's people. We represent God on the earth. So, and that kind of humbled me when I represent God. I'm one of the representatives of God, put it that way. I'm not the representative. I'm one of God's representatives. So are you. This assembly is a representative of the people of God. We're the people of God, and we should represent God. We should be the ones that are presenting God to to the world around. The people in the world around are not the people of God. They're the people of, they're the people of the world, or people of the prince of the world, or whatever. Moses suffered affliction with the people of God. That refers to the Old Testament. So most of the time it refers back to Israel. Moses suffered affliction with the people of God, but we are the people of God now. So I'm just going to finish off with verse 10 here. I guess we'll be doing this another week. But there's quite a bit left in the rest of the chapter. There remains therefore, he that has entered into God's rest has also rested from his own works as God did from his. So I think that's the best way to understand that it's not Christ resting from his works. It's us, when we get to heaven, and it's not actually us resting from our works in salvation either, that we're resting from, I'm working for my salvation. When I'm saved, I can rest. That's not really the thought here. The thought here is, when I get to heaven, all my works, I'll be resting from them. All the labor I've done tried to do for the Lord, the whatever it is, the witnessing maybe, or the serving in the assembly, trying to preach the gospel, whatever, all that will be behind us. We will rest from our works in heaven. The works, so we only have a limited opportunity to serve God here on earth at this time. The opportunities are limited. The time is limited. When we get to eternity, there'll be no further opportunities for service like there are now. We'll have ceased from our works as God did from his. God finished his work, and God will rest in his love in heaven. Zephaniah says that he will rest in his love, and we will rest in the love of God for all eternity. We will rest in God's love with him. It's really nice. It's a nice thought to the people of God ceased from their works as God did from his, finished, and we will be able to rest for eternity. So let's just close off there. It's noon. We'll finish the chapter next week, DV, in the will of the Lord, and we'll just close now with a word of prayer.